This is the Bad Batch podcast on TV Podcast Industries, and we're talking about Season 3, Episode 14, Flash Strike.
I don't see him. Shall we break comm silence?
No. We continue toward the base. Hunter will head that way, too.
Are you sure we're headed in the right direction?
I've been here before. It's not a place you forget.
You broke out of here once. At least this time you're breaking in.
I'd rather not do either. But Omega didn't leave me behind when she could have. I owe her. See? He found us.
Did Rampart make it?
Unfortunately, yes.
I heard that. You three truly are defective clones. If you had any common sense, you wouldn't have come here. You won't get out of this alive.
We'll take our chances.
Welcome back, fellow Batchers. This is TV Podcast Industries. You are listening to the Bad Batch podcast, and we're talking about the Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 14, Flash Strike. It's the penultimate episode ever of The Bad Batch. I am one of your hosts, Chris.
And I'm your other host, Derek. Welcome back. Yes, the penultimate episode. And we are one podcaster down this week.
Yes, we left him back in Coruscant. He didn't actually make,
he didn't make the jump.
The ship. Yeah. So he'll catch up. He's getting a taxi. It's just going to take a bit of time.
But in fairness to John on TV Podcast Industries, this is our third podcast of the week. He did cover Shogun with me and also our first episode of The Dead Boy Detectives on Netflix in the Sandman universe. So John's done lots of podcasting this week. So Chris is going to take the load for this one, aren't you, Chris?
Yes, and that sounds dirtier than he meant it.
Of course.
See, I'm doing both roles. I'm doing John's dirty mind and my innuendo.
Exactly.
So quickly, tell our fellow Batchers very quickly about Dead Boy Detectives.
Absolutely, yes.
5 seconds.
All right, Dead Boy Detectives is set in the universe of The Sandman from Neil Gaiman, one of my favorite comic book universes of all time. We covered every episode of The Sandman show on Netflix. The show was originally created for HBO and is now all available, every episode of it, available on Netflix. So it is set in the same universe. You will get crossover characters from The Sandman if you enjoyed that. And it's about two kids who died in different decades and have teamed up to investigate grisly murders and grisly spooky goings on. A little bit supernatural, a little bit lock and key, and a little bit Sandman. So
excellent. Love the sound of it. I have to catch up myself because I will be doing the old guest spot, you know, now that Bad Batch is coming to an end.
Exactly.
And let's talk about that.
Yes. This is the second last episode of the show.
Ever.
Yeah. So episode 15 comes out next week on Disney Plus, the final episode of the Bad Batch story and saga. We have no confirmation of what's coming next, if anything's coming next after this show. As we've talked about many times on the Bad Batch podcast, this is the sequel series to The Clone Wars, so following on directly with those characters. So there is a possibility that something might spin out of the Bad Batch show, maybe Star Wars Bounty Hunters, with gathering all the bounty hunters that appeared in the show over the years, maybe something like that, but we have no idea. So next week, at the moment, we believe it's just one episode coming out next week, episode 15. Just a note that last season 2, was 16 episodes long, so it is possible the 15th episode could be a double episode, but we have no idea. At the moment, we're just expecting it's going to be one more episode to go, which is really sad.
Exactly. Good news is, the show comes out next Wednesday. We will have it in your ear holes by the weekend. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday is May the 4th.
It is, yes.
So we will have our annual Star Wars kind of palooza, that is social media announcements.
Yes, we will.
So I'm expecting they'll say nothing between then, maybe Saturday, and then Saturday we'll get a tease for something. I think that's the thing.
That would be awesome. But one thing that has been confirmed that we're getting on May 4th is Tales of the Empire, which we will be covering here on TV Podcast Industries and on the Star Wars podcast on TV Podcast Industries. So you'll be able to get that after May 4th. We won't be able to record it in advance, unfortunately. But we're looking forward to it. It's going to be really exciting to see some of the darker side of the tales of the Empire.
Yeah, everyone loves the dark side. Mm-hmm.
I think they love watching it. They seem to dispatch people quite a lot, so I don't think I'd be able to join them.
Yeah, no, but they have cookies, as they say. Yeah. Come to the dark side, we have cookies. And to be fair, you'll never be away and have a power cut when you're on the dark side. Force lightning, dark side power.
There you go.
Never need to worry.
But you have lightsabers on the light side. You can just turn it on.
You have lightsabers on the dark side too.
Yeah, but they're red and they keep a room dark. Red light is not something you want in your room. A nice purple
Unless
light, maybe a green one, something like that, maybe. But just a reminder, if you want to get access to all the podcasts that we do, including all of our episodes of Shogun, which finished this week, awesome show as well, or our episodes of Dead Boy Detectives, or, of course, all of our episodes of The Bad Batch, you can subscribe to the podcast on tvpodcastindustries.com. There's loads of options for podcast players of your choice that you can choose over on the website there, or just search for tvpodcastindustries.com wherever you listen to your podcast. We also want to hear your thoughts on the series so far and on that finale. Email us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com as well, or you can join us over in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/tvpodcastindustries.
Yes.
And just a reminder, as it's the 14th episode, that means it's the second last question that you're going to be getting in the Bad Batch pub quiz, cantina quiz, that'll be coming up later on in the episode as well. So 14th question of 15, maybe 16 if there's a 16th episode next week.
Great stuff. But with all that said and done, Derek, should we jump into our coverage and our discussion of episode 14, Flash Strike of the Bad Batch Season 3?
Absolutely.
Do you want to tell us who gave us what, where, when, and how with the episode details?
Sure. Executive producer for the show are, of course, Brad Rau and Jennifer Corbett. This episode was written by executive producer Brad Rau and directed by Nate Villanueva. And the story editor, of course, is Matt McNevis. Lots of very recognizable names as we get to the end of this family show that they've been working on for so many years.
Yeah. No, it's 100%. As you said, like, that is the thing. There's the culmination of a lot of stories here.
Mm-hmm.
So good to see that their guiding hands are on as we come to the end of our journey, our end of our cruise with the cruise ship Bad Batch.
Absolutely. So, Chris, do you want to tell us what they gave us with your synopsis for the Bad Batch 314 Flash Strike?
Sure. Dr. Hemlock is alerted that the Bad Batch infiltrated the relay station and sends fighters to intercept the incoming vessel. Hunter, Wrecker, Crosshair, and Rampart are forced to crash near Tantas base and continue on foot while hunted by stormtrooper patrols. With the base on high alert, Omega takes advantage of the distraction to scout her planned escape route and finds the Zillow Beast in an underground enclosure. In the jungle, Rampart accidentally wakes a large creature that attacks him and the rest of the Bad Batch. He is separated from the others and gets captured. Echo, meanwhile, infiltrates the base and encounters Dr. Carr, who tells him about the other children being held with Omega.
You know, the last couple of weeks we've been complaining that it's been slightly difficult to get three blaster points out of the episode, and this episode just ties it up very neatly with three little stories, all combining together.
We can literally discuss each and every one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where do you want to start? We've got Rampart and the boys, we've got Echo's escape, and we've got Omega and the kids. Where do you want to start, Chris?
Let's talk and start with blast point number one, Rampart and the boys.
Yes, so tagging along with the boys on the way to Tantas, Rampart still stuck with them as they enter the atmosphere coming into Tantas. And very quickly, I kind of like that Dr. Hemlock is alerted to the possibility that the Bad Batch, Clone Force 99, as they are still called, are on their way. So he's in no doubt that they've made their way here. They kind of talk about, you know, over Coruscant, there was a battle. They stole the ship just before this science vessel went into hyperspace, and he goes, uh-oh, get the ships out there. They're definitely coming. We need to lock the entire place down.
Yeah, there was no hemming or hawing or like this typical bad guy where, like, well, they'd never make it to our impenetrable base. He was like, oh, no, they're here then. No, they're right outside. Let's get this sorted. Send up a squadron to the ship and make sure that everyone is scanned on the ship. And check their ID.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, it's fair.
Hemlock is smarter than your average Imperial officer, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
To the point where when the ship lands, and like I'm kind of jumping slightly forward, the ship lands, and the crates come down with the commanding captain and a number of stormtroopers, the guys come up to the rest of them and go, oh, no, you're not coming out. Like, we're checking you and the whole contents of the ship. No, you're not. No, we have to get this here straight away. They're Hemlock's orders.
And exactly. Yeah, absolutely. There's been a distance traveled now between your security point that you had at Coruscant and getting here to Tantus, so we need to do a proper security check again. So they all accept once Dr. Hemlock says, this is what happens. You know, this is not...
It's not even Dr. Hemlock. It's Hemlock's name dropped.
Exactly.
That's why I'm like, there is a level of fear that they've been culminating and kind of cultivating for Hemlock across this season in particular.
Absolutely.
Especially anyone on Tantus or involved with Tantus. You don't ask questions. You do as you're told. To the point where we even see like Cad Bane not asking questions.
That's right.
Troopers, that just like, don't ask questions. Just do as you're told.
A couple of episodes ago where he specifically said to Dr. Kerr, if you ask questions like that, you're going to get yourself into trouble. So he's like walking away, not telling you anything. Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the start of the episode where we have Hemlock sending out his troops, but we have the team on board at Rampart moaning away and the whole way down here. You know, we kind of talked about it last week. He is the unwanted passenger and unwilling passenger as well aboard this. So he made his deal. He arranged to get to Tantus. He made good on the deal, but he didn't get away. He got to be on the planet with the Bad Batch as they go in to save Omega. But it's a really interesting moment and really fun as they have the ships coming overhead, shooting their stolen ship out of the sky. You know, they don't even get to land at this time. Chris, I think you made comments earlier on in the season about how many crash landings we've had in this season. But here, they don't even land in this one. That's how bad it is. It's going to explode and they're all going to die. So they have to jump out using their cables to get out of the ship.
And take a knock. Like, that's at least a 2-3-story drop that they did.
Yeah, absolutely. But most of them get pretty close to the ground before. Yeah, and most of them get pretty close to the ground before they duck and roll. Except, poor old Rampart gets the dodgy one and gets stuck just out of the ship until Hunter uses his pinpoint accuracy to laser that in half, basically, to use his gun and shoot that cable in half to allow Rampart to fall. I just loved it because again he's screaming like something out of a horror movie when he thinks he's going to fall to his death, but caught by Hunter in the air. And then when they meet back up again with each other, where Hunter arrives on his own and meets up with Wrecker and Crosshair, and they go, "Is Rampart not with you?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, he is, unfortunately." So even after all that work to save him, they don't really want him around.
It's really interesting, I found, that they made Rampart the comedic foil. In my head, he is almost the walking, talking Weekend at Bernie's, where it's just like, they have him a lot, they have him with them, he's dead weight for them, he's like, they're making him do stuff, and they don't really want him there. It's you remember that annoying cousin kid that used to hang around with you? But they had that annoying kid or cousin that would hang around with you and then, like, just be really spiteful and annoying. Mm-hmm. It was the only child one, that one.
Yeah.
That's Rampart.
Yeah.
And they're really leaning into it, which makes me think, now that he is captured, because, again, fast forward slightly, he's been captured. Will he have a redemptive arc?
Well, there was an interesting one here, and again, I know we have been saying he is comedic relief, and he has been, and as I like that you called out the Weekend at Bernie's moment last week in last week's episode, where he's thrown around like a rag doll, because the animators and directors were saying that's what they were going for. They were wondering whether to go full Weekend at Bernie's or whether just to tie it back to maybe a little bit of ragdoll physics, but they went full Weekend at Bernie's was their quote, which I liked. But there is a serious moment with Rampart and Crosshair where they finally have a bit of a confrontation, where Rampart's almost saying to Crosshair, "This isn't you. You are a member of the Empire, just like I am." And that's what you think he's saying. And then Crosshair is telling him, no, I realize the Empire is not for me. I follow orders as long as they're coming from the right person. That's what I do. We call back all the way to that line that Crosshair has constantly been saying about good soldiers follow orders. And he will follow orders if they're coming from the right person. The right people now are the Bad Batch and the Rebels, effectively. And then Rampart turns that again, saying, oh, so you're like me. You're in it for yourself, not for the Empire. So Rampart saying, I'm not in it for the Empire anymore. I'm in it for myself. And the Empire allows me to accomplish my goals. He loves that feeling of power, which we saw last episode. You know, that's what he gets off on. He loves being that leader. He loves having people bow and kowtow towards him. And the Empire gave him that. So that's the only reason he was involved with the Empire, which is interesting. Yeah. So what that may mean, as you say, going into the last episode, maybe Rampart's allegiance may shift towards the Bad Batch if they accomplish what they're going to deliver for him. If they're going to be able to get him off the planet before the bad things go down in the final episode, maybe he'll align with them and help them out.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if we will see a Hemlock threaten Rampart. And it's kind of like, to belittle him, you're nothing, yada, yada, yada. We break, tear him down. Mm. And we will see Rampart then have a choice.
Yeah.
Side with Hemlock, side with the Batch and Omega. Mm-hmm. And potentially Omega, Omega, as John would say, that's where we might have the somewhat redemptive. Like, let's say, like, he will do the right thing.
Yeah.
For the wrong reasons, but for the right, i.e. a selfish reason, but it's his right thing. So, it's just interesting as you have, like, they could have left him. Like, there is a reason that the writers are bringing him along.
Yes.
To this, so I'm very interested to see where that character goes in this last episode ahead.
Absolutely.
Bringing it back to the jungle, he is also that, like I said, he's that annoying cliche.
Yeah, he is like the one you do not want with you at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to hide from the troopers that are everywhere in the forest here. And you see it in those first couple of scenes as the Batch are hiding behind trees and dodging and ducking all the way through. You see how close they're getting to them. And Rampart's not being listened to, so he lies against a massive creature. When he's been told the place was really dangerous. We've seen this creature earlier on in the season when Crosshair and Omega escaped from Tantus. So we know this place is full of beasts, and he lies right against one and then runs away screaming, arms in the air, alerting everybody in the area of their presence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Not cool. Not cool, Rampart. Not cool.
And the only thing I will laugh about is that does bring what I thought was really cute, which was Wrecker trying to jump on the back and strangle the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, he's big arms. Definitely got... They're not that big.
Yes. Yes, they're not that big.
It was fun to watch. It was very fun to see.
Absolutely. But as you said, that leads to Rampart getting captured and taken away by the Imperial forces at Tantus Base.
Yep. And so basically, when it comes to Rampart and the boys, Rampart is no longer with the boys. Coming into the next episode, he's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys outside of Echo are outside the base.
They are.
On their way there.
Yeah.
They will make their way in by the end of next episode.
Absolutely. Or they'll be waiting right outside.
Yes.
Yeah. But I must say, I know you mentioned Wrecker there and his moment of going up against the big beast on the land. I just love his positive attitude. He's talking to Crosshair and he's going, you escaped from this place before. Breaking in's got to be easier. At least you're not breaking out this time. You know, that's just the positive way that he's perfectly happy. We mentioned before, there's no particular plan here. The plan is to get Omega out. That's the plan. And that seems to be as far as they go. And Crosshair knows where he got out last time, but they haven't really made a specific plan. But that's fine, Wrecker. They'll get there. They'll do the job. They'll get home. That's what's in his head.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing I'll say to their positive about the Empire is a small group always and seemingly can do a lot of damage to the Empire.
Absolutely.
I give you example Rogue One. I give you example A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
I give you example...
Yeah.
Name the examples. Basically, a small squad can usually get in, do something in a large fortress for the Empire and get back out.
With enough hope, Chris, because rebellions are built on hope.
They are. They are.
And a few people and some weapons. That's it.
Yes. And a lot of the Force and the Chosen One and lots of... Anyway, let's not get into that. I think that leaves us wrapped up on the boys and Rampart. So we'll move into the other member of the boys. No, I'm not talking about Butcher. I'm talking about Echo for Blast Point number 2.
Ah yes, Echo all on his own on the science vessel, having to make his own escape throughout the episode. You know, there's some good bits about this. I like when they separate the characters out a bit, so you can get a broader view of everything that's going on in the episode. Echo being on his own allows you to see what Dr. Hemlock's doing from another perspective. It's not just seeing Hemlock; it's that we now have Echo working his way through all the other troops, getting his way into Tantive space. He's already inside. He's on a ship that's gone inside the base itself. So you know at some point during the episode, either he's going to get caught or he's going to be inside, hidden in a stormtrooper outfit, right? So that's kind of cool.
And again, remember about Echo, he's a one-handed stormtrooper right now, which is sometimes slightly identifiable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's a slightly distinguishing mark.
Yeah. But he did take care of that in this episode.
Which I found really cool.
Loved it.
Like, I loved that. He basically steals the hand off a droid. And I'm like, I did not know that many droids are kind of plug and play. Good to know for the future.
But, importantly, it's on the hand that he has the droid attachment on. So yes, when we originally saw that back in Clone Wars, when he got it attached to his hand, we were going, oh my God, he's got R2-D2's attachment that R2-D2 uses to access all the computers. So that's the attachment that Tech has in his hand. So now he's swapping back to another attachment. So, so I guess it's a multi-purpose hand, multi-function hand.
I'll be honest, I'm not fully sure what I see.
Okay.
Like, he works his way through.
Mm-hmm.
He does some stuff on the, like, on the keypads. Some of them go red, some go green. It's like him trying to access certain doors and get through other doors.
Exactly.
That's the only thing, like, kind of, that, for me, we see until we get to the end of the episode with Echo, and he essentially is cornered by a doctor because he's in an area that he's not supposed to be, which we know that area is where the blood testing was being done.
Mm-hmm.
This is the scientific lab.
It was Nalasay's lab, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So we had seen multiple times that last machine that he's at, and he's kind of jimmying away, and that was the one where we saw the Omega's blood being kind of ding, 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 it's good.
Exactly.
And then we see a certain very well-known doctor enter, and I did, for a split second, think this was Hemlock.
Mm.
Coming in, I was like, oh, like, is this the death of Echo? Like, is he gone? I was like,
really?
He's going to be captured and something's going to happen. Nope, it is Carr. And we do get a really nice speech. He takes off his helmet. You get the recognition between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know who you are. I know who you are.
Uh-huh.
The helmets come off, and it is what I found was a nice speech from Echo, which is, how are you doing this to other clones?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
You're a clone yourself. We already talked about that in our previous discussions.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, no, it's different. I'm just doing science. Like, I am following orders.
Well, much more importantly, Chris, because we've mentioned multiple times about the connections here to Nazi Germany. And, you know, that's always been there in Star Wars. That's always the reference there. But it's very specific here. What Emery Carr is saying is, I'm just following orders. It's not really my fault. I've just been told what to do and I'm following it. Yeah. So we've been looking for this opportunity for Emery Carr to step up. She's had many discussions throughout the series. She's gotten very close to Omega, gotten very close to the kids. Over the last few episodes, she's been criticized multiple times for her concern for the kids. And here she is meeting Echo. And again, that moment when they say, I recognize you. It's not that they recognize each other. They've never seen each other before. They know each other because of the way Omega has spoken about each of them to the other, saying that you should trust them. There's someone that you should, that will be able to help us if we ever need help. And Omega's brought the two of them together here. And, you know, Echo's here just to find Omega and to release the rest of the team. But Emery spills the beans and says, actually, it's not just Omega. She's not the only kid that's being treated badly. There's also this other group of kids that are there. We have to make sure they're all freed.
Yeah. And two things. One, seeing Echo with his helmet off and a lot of his attachment off.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see they actually had, hats off to the artists here, they tanned his skin differently. So essentially he had basically his skin underneath was whiter where it, like his usual headgear is. And I was like, very, very cool. Very small touch.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just basically because like if he wears these headpieces more often, like he's, Your skin is going to tan. Really? Like you get the watch mark on your arm well, right in the sun.
Yeah.
It's essentially that. But
it's mad. I'd always seen Echo has a whiter skin palette than the others because he was so close to death when he had the operations done to him and had the attachments fitted to him. So I always think that's his skin color is just that slight off gray because he looks close to death. So I just didn't notice it. But that's a really cool touch that they included. No. But you know, again, this show is all about the details. One of the best animations that we have on TV at the moment. So
outside of Invincible, but that's a different audience, different discussion.
Well, we said that's a great animated TV show, though, Chris. This is still some of the best animation that we see on TV on a weekly basis. True. I would say. True. I would say.
Yes.
But different style to
very different.
Invincible. Definitely.
But we are left with the two of them there, and it is we are going to go to the vault where Omega is, and that's kind of preps those two to move forward.
Well, exactly. You know, first point leaves us with the Bad Batch and Rampart outside of Tantus. Now we have Echo inside Tantus joining up with Emery Carr, who we hoped at some point at least was going to turn and join up with the team. So here she is joining up with Echo to go and save the kids. So here we are. We've got our setup for next week. But there's one final little piece of the puzzle with our blaster point number three. Because we have Omega and the kids. You know, I wondered about this the first time I saw the episode. I wondered about this because technically not a huge amount happened from what happened last week. There was lots of conversations that Omega was having here. But when I watched it the second time, I was kind of going, you know what, actually there's a lot more here. There's the hope that Omega is actually able to bring to the kids here. The minute that she hears the laser cannons going off, she goes, that's it. That's my brothers. They're here to save us. These kids have been beaten down. They've been locked up. They've been put into solitary confinement over and over again, taking away their hope over and over again of the fact that they will never get home, effectively. And here we have Omega instantly with the hope when she hears those weapons going off. Her brothers are here. They're definitely going to save her. She just needs to help them out somehow. Last week, she found a way out of the cells. This week, she uses that way out of the cells to investigate, effectively, see if there's a way that she can maybe connect up with them when they get on board. She has a very limited time to be able to do that, but she discovers something. And I don't know about you, Chris, but if it hadn't been for the subtitles on the episode, I would have had no idea what she discovered.
No. And I still, even that discovery of, I'll just drop it now, it's the Zillow Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Even now I'm like, wait, I know who the Zillow Beast is. We saw this beast twice now in Bad Batch and once in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
It is essentially the Godzilla. It grows bigger. I don't get it. Like, what's the... I'm not like the... Ooh.
Well, it's the fact that it's here is pretty huge. They're experimenting on it. And I suppose the way I'm seeing it right now, and there may be something different next week. I'm not the key expert on the Zillow Beast. You are right. We've only seen it three times. It was a dangling thread from the Clone Wars. It was something that we knew the Empire, particularly Dr. Hemlock, was experimenting on. And we know from the episode that we saw the Zillow Beast last that it's effectively like an alien. It's like, well, a xenomorph, sorry, from the movie Alien. It can take out everything around it. It's massively powerful, and they've been making it bigger and bigger and bigger and experimenting on it. We only see a very, very small proportion of that beast. And if you look at the scale to the stormtroopers that are around it, it's huge. And Omega's made that discovery. So I think she might think there's a way of using this in her escape. She's made that discovery. If they can get in there to the Zillow Beast, maybe they can release it and it will absolutely destroy Tantus base. I think that might be all it is.
Yeah. And I think basically if you trying to think of the there's multiple filmed reference, but essentially there's like, think of any of the latest kind of Godzilla films.
Absolutely. But go back. You're really close, Chris. You're really close because they've been referencing it all season. Jurassic Park has been referenced all season. This is the T-Rex of the Clone Wars. So if they release this, it'll be like Jurassic World, where the T-Rex walks straight through and just crushes everything in its way.
Pretty much. And they just had, because Omega's like, I found a way out. And I'm like, are you just going to release the beast? And just there you like, go. Everyone's dead. And I'm like, okay, cool.
That's possible. That's entirely possible.
If the Zillow Beast comes out the side of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
like proper, like explodes out the side, then I'm like, no, that's also Godzilla. Yeah, like, that's just pure. I'm like, okay, you're taking, well done. Yeah. I see what you did there. And look, for me, that's cool. I just didn't get it.
Just riding on the back of the Zilla Beast off into the sunset of a newly reclaimed Tantus. Maybe that's the way they'll do it. The only reason I'm saying Jurassic Park rather than Godzilla, and I know Godzilla's been famous for 70 years, is just because the animation, obviously, on the show was done a couple of years ago. I don't think they realize the confluence of all of the Godzilla stuff that's happening at the moment with the Monarch TV show and Godzilla v. Kong and Godzilla Minus One all happening within 6 months of each other, and this happening within that week. I don't think that was planned somehow. So I think it was probably, we took inspiration from a movie a couple of decades ago. That'll be fine. Nobody will make a connection, and suddenly Godzilla's everywhere. So I'm sure they'll take it. I'm sure they'll go, we love Godzilla. Of course we've based it on Godzilla.
Yeah, exactly. And Godzilla won like an Oscar. So of course.
There you go. Yeah.
Some of our listeners who have listened to me in particular know that I have a certain distaste for cliches, mm-hmm. tropes. The one thing I want to call out is that they really hammed up the Omega getting back to her cell in time with the other kids and the doctor, and they slowed that down to a crawl. And it was just, it was obvious she was going to get back.
Yeah.
It is a trope. I was just like, oh, fine, get on with it. And I literally was like, no, no, seriously, get on. We know what's going to, like, she's going to be sitting there. It's going to be fun. The only saving grace I will give it is, again, the animation, the smirk on Omega's face when she is sitting right there at the end.
Absolutely.
I'm like, okay, good payoff. Nice payoff. She is a smirky child.
But you can just see the defiance in it, though. Exactly. It's not just a smile, I did it. It's a smile, I got one over on you, and I know my way out of here, and this will all be over soon. You know, it's all of that combined together, which is fantastic in the animation. But you're right. It is a trope. It's more, to me, it's more like a marker of the genre. If you're going to have a breakout movie where someone's digging holes and has to make it back into the cell in time, you have to show that moment right on screen just to cement the nod. Exactly.
That's right. I was like, if they suddenly start like Omega's running around and like shaking dirt out of her kind of pant leg onto the ground, digging a tunnel. Like,
Well, let's see next week if she rides the Zilla Beast over a fence like Steve McQueen rode the motorbike over the fence.
I really did not think about them riding the Zilla Beast.
I've said it twice now, so no, I'm obviously exactly. thinking about it.
But now you're like, I'm like, that would be cool. If one of the other kids is like force sensitive enough to kind of communicate with animals, like our previous Wookiee friend.
Yeah.
Oh, then you get that chance. And I'm like, oh. Then you do get, and like, yeah, okay, then that makes it like Hi-Ho Silver away, but on the Zilla Beast.
Put on the Zilla Beast, exactly. Exactly. And that's definitely a Jedi power that we've seen a lot with Dave Filoni's side of the Star Wars universe. That's Ezra Bridger's biggest power, is the ability to communicate with beasts. So, entirely possible. One of the kids that are in here, the untrained Jedi-sensitive kids, could be the one to control the beast. Anything else about these moments in here with the kids?
Nothing major for me. Again, the kids banding together to protect Omega and to get her back in time. Yeah. You're seeing that group kind of slowly kind of formulating, coming together.
Yeah.
Again, it's a trope, but it's a trope for a reason in that it works, because it is shorthand for they're coming together, they're banding together, they're becoming a unit, they're becoming her batch to a degree.
Yeah.
The one line I'll call out is when the alarms start going off and the kids are around the table, and Omega instantaneously goes, "My family's come for me."
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, because that's what it is.
My brothers are here. Yeah.
My brothers are here. They've come for me. And how did you know? Because they said they would.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
And you're like, yep, that's the epitome of what this show is about.
Yeah.
The Clone Force 99 are a band of brothers.
Exactly.
And their little sister. Like, they're all together. They're family. Yeah. I don't like saying, I try to avoid saying they're family because there's too many Fast and Furious references there.
Absolutely.
But you know where I'm going with it.
Absolutely. But again, Fast and Furious with a Zillow Beast. Maybe that's Fast and Furious 12. coming to Star Wars.
You're just going to see a rat. You're gonna, but okay, only if you get a second Zillow Beast and someone on like record on that doing the Paul Walker nod to
there you
Vin
go.
Diesel.
Could be it.
Then you're okay. Then could I will accept that.
Excellent, excellent.
What about yourself? Any final notes?
Just the only thing, and I don't know why I felt so sorry for poor Eva, who'd said that she just wasn't feeling very well, because again, cutest kid voice actor in the world. So just where she says, "I'm not feeling very well," to delay Dr. Sadler from investigating Omega's cell. I don't know why, but just the way that she tested her and went, "Everything's looking the same," and then said, "Now monitor even more closely," I was suddenly going, oh God, she's going to have like 3 tests a day now. That she's just sold herself out just for this one moment so Omega doesn't get caught. And now she could be having like 3-5 tests a day just in case she's possibly sick. It's one of those ones that you risk when you say you're too sick to go to school as a kid, that you risk suddenly you're in a doctor's office and all you wanted was just a day off to avoid your homework. The one other realization that came to me watching the episode, or just after watching the episode, that really worries me about the finale next week, is that everybody's here on the planet, all of our major characters, except one that has been in and out of the show, or two that have been in and out of the show for a while, but one is Captain Rex, who we do see in the future of Rebels, so we know he's alive.
Yep.
But everybody else that's on this planet, all of our major named characters, have not been seen in any other live action or animated show, which means to me maybe there is a Death Star explosion type moment in the final episode on Tantus, and maybe we do lose more characters than we were hoping for at the end of next week's episode. Yep. Do they make the greatest sacrifice? Do we lose the Bad Batch so that they can take down the facility, take down Tantus? If they freed all the clones that are in Tantus, which is their plan, that would leave a lot of clones out in the universe, and we know they're quite scarce as the movies and TV shows go on. From now, there's not a huge amount of clones in the universe. So is this the final sacrifice, that they sacrifice them all to stop these experiments from continuing?
I'm not going to go too much into it. You prompted this idea to me off air, and I was like, the more that I've thought about it, it would be the most felony thing to do. In that, it is the ultimate, like you're saying, the ultimate sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And you basically, Tantus is destroyed, Mount Tantus is destroyed,
mm-hmm.
a number of the clones are destroyed, Bad Batch sacrifice,
yeah.
Omega and the kids, and the Doctor, and Nala Se survive. You get a number of them out, maybe not Nalasai even, but you get a number of, you have to get Omega and the little kids out. And I can see the scene where it's like, I'm not leaving without you. Yes, you are. You need to get out. And
Absolutely.
That's the Batch pushing her out and kind of holding the fort.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Holdor from Game of Thrones.
Well, yeah.
Hold the door.
Oh.
Like, I can see that kind of moment happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be fitting. Like, again, that team is about following orders.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be them making that decision. Making that ultimate decision, ultimate sacrifice. So, yeah. You've sold me on the idea. I hope it's not too true.
Yeah.
I hope the Batch survive and they're just in a corner, a far distant corner of a galaxy far, far away.
Back on Pabu. And somebody has wiped the planet from the Imperial records, so nobody can find it again. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. That'd be nice. Let's hope for that. Great stuff. Overall, Chris, what did you think of the episode?
Overall, I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Again, scoring, but without the cool wackiness that John does.
Add the wackiness, Chris. Add the wackiness.
Sure. 3 out of 5 Zillow Beasts riding on the back of an Omega. There you go.
Nice.
There. So, like, the Zillow Beast is now so small, it's on Omega's back.
Love
it. Look, the only reason, again, it did exactly what it said on the tin, but I just felt it set the chessboard up for next week. It just feels like we have a lot of story left to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed this episode. It was kind of just a bit of... If this was earlier in the season, I'd be fine with it. Again, it's just felt... I can't separate that we only have one episode. This was the penultimate. I just feel like we should be at least another... They should have been another 20 minutes and they've more set up and they kind of leave on a cliffhanger, because I can't see in my own vision how you get... Because again, all we know is potentially one more episode. How you get everything wrapped up in the next 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfactory. You can't do it in a satisfactory way in what I would feel is fitting for 3 seasons of Clone Force Time. But I am holding judgment and all that. Like, again, holding until we see next week and see how it all comes together. 3 out of 5 Zillow Beasts on the back of Omega.
Excellent, Chris. Thank you for that. Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I think it's, you know, I always hate rating episodes. As you know, it's really difficult, especially in ongoing series. I'm fine with movies; they're one-off experiences. In you know the way I kind of see a TV show like this that's ongoing. Yes, it's 20 minutes long, but there's only 20 minutes more left, so we're kind of, it'd be like rating 20 minutes in the middle of the Dune 2 movie or something. You know, it's like, it's a weird thing. What did you think about those 20 minutes? I don't know what happens next. I only know what happened before, you know? So next week, let's see what the thoughts are on the final, the finale of the season and how the season all wrapped up. But there are, again, essential points here. Having to get one of the members of the Bad Batch at least inside of Tantus was really important. And the way they did it, I thought was really cool looking. And, you know, giving back Echo's hand after he hasn't had it now for a number of years. Thought that was quite cool. And having, you know, the annoying Rampart along with the Bad Batch for a bit of a laugh, and the hope that Omega's bringing to the kids. Those three elements of the story I thought were really cool. And seeing potentially the turn now of Emery Carr joining up with the Bad Batch, which we hoped would come at some point. All those things had to happen as we get to the last episode. So I'm glad they've happened, and I think they were done in a really well, a really good way. So overall, I think I'm a little bit higher on the episode than you, but hopefully next week's episode will make up for that, and it'll end off the show in a much better way, Chris, huh?
Yeah, they have to. The only way is up.
But I am ready for a drink, Chris. I think we need to get over to the cantina.
Yes, let's do it. Derek, do you want to tell us the question for Season 3, Episode 14, Flash Strike of Bad Batch?
Yes, so the 14th question in the Bad Batch Cantina Quiz is, how many fighters are deployed by Dr. Hemlock to intercept the Bad Batch on their arrival at Tantus? So that's it. That's the 14th question in our Cantina Quiz of 15, maybe a 16th, but we're guessing 15. Gather together all your answers, all your correct answers to those questions. Email them into us at the end of the series to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com, and you'll be in with a chance of getting your hands on the Bad Batch Funko Pops. 5 Funko Pops of the Bad Batch, which will be sent out to you from us here at TV Podcast Industries. So we'll be wrapping that up after the end of the series as well. So going to give you the question one more time. How many fighters are deployed by Dr. Hemlock to intercept the Bad Batch on their arrival at Tantus? And that's it. Let's get on to a little bit of feedback from our wonderful fellow Batchers.
Yes. Over on Facebook, Dr. Bob Phillips had this to say. That just cannot be the penultimate Bad Batch. There's still Emery to redeem, the kids to rescue, the resurrection of Scorch Tech, and the escape of Hemlock to a distant peninsula as the clones undertake the wildest prison break in Imperial history. Plus the most important question, how do they keep the inspection droid hatch runs so free of dust and grease that Omega looked as clean on return as on entry? So, last part first. Yeah, very true. Good thing is to know they probably, because the droids can get in there, there's a cleaning droid. There is literally, there's definitely going to be at some point in the future a story. Like, you can see it now. It's going to be like Matt Berry doing a story of, I am a cleaning droid in the Star Wars universe on the Death Star.
And they already have the assets because they're all part of Disney. There's the one from Wall-E, wasn't there? Where they
yes.
had the cleaning droid that ran all around the ship, cleaning up after everybody. So, so potentially that. Actually, weirdly, on StarWars.com today, they have a couple of little trivia moments about the episode. There's nothing massive from this episode that you wouldn't know, I don't think, or that we haven't talked about. But they did mention that these tubes are used to transport all across the ship. So that's what's going past Omega when she's inside the tube. So droids do come in and out of this, and those little transport boxes that are going past. So it's kept quite clean. I was joking that maybe they just attached a few brushes to those those boxes that are going past her, and they just clean up after them. But the only thing that's in there is space dust, right?
So, yeah. And to answer the final part of Dr. Bob's question or kind of comment, we haven't discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
There is still the operative,
yeah,
which did not turn up in any aspect of this episode.
Yeah.
So there's that little thing that we need to address.
He's gone back into hibernation.
Yes. And he is
not
the Winter Soldier.
At all. He's definitely their version of the Winter Soldier, without a doubt. Yeah, but we haven't seen him in a while. Presume he's going to be back in the next episode. And I'm guessing that when we get the reveal that's our little tech going up against his brothers in the final episode. So there is a lot to do in the last episode. I'm very hopeful that we will get a full hour or a full 50 minutes from two back-to-back episodes being released. They started off the show with two episodes. They started off each season with two episodes or even three episodes at times. And we've had multiple two episodes coming out throughout the series, two episode blocks. So I just have this feeling in my head that we're going to get a big two episode block next week, and that'll be that's an hour long movie. There's loads you can do in that, right?
I'm going for three. I'm gonna go out on a limb.
Because like, keep throwing. They're gonna give us 20 episodes next week.
No, they go three. Good round three. It's a mini movie. It's 90 minutes. Like, I think that I like the idea. 90 minutes with credits.
I want a nice tight 50. That's what I'm looking for.
Yep. No. Let's see. Again, you like that more concise, and I do like some of those kind of stretched out, elongated pieces. So let's see what they give us next week.
And that's it. All we're going to get is 22 minutes next week. Yeah.
Thanks, Dr. Bob, for the feedback.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. Bob. And just in on the wire for our feedback section, Lisa Winrich says, every time I walk by a box of Kleenex, my hand tremors. Have not forgotten Dee Bradley Baker's pre-season warning about needing tissues for the finale. I think I let out a Willem, aka Rampart, scream when Omega discovered another Mount Tantus specimen and prisoner, the Zillow Beast. Anyone else rooting for Hemlock to suffer the same twist of fate as the former Captain Man, falling victim to the soon-to-be-released prisoners? I hope I have enough emotional strength to process and survive the epic series finale next week. I never recovered from sacrifice last season. I'll cross the braids on my imaginary straw, took a doll, and hope Dee Bradley Baker was warning us we will be overwhelmed with tears of joy, not heartache, for our beloved Bad Batch family. Thanks so much, Lisa. Yeah, I'm really hopeful. I know I've been expecting the worst, but as I say, plan for the worst, hope for the best, as they say. But let's hope that it is tears of joy, not tears of heartache next week at the end of the season, that there's a joyful moment for our crew. Oh, and that Rampart scream I mentioned, that will definitely go down in the history books. Maybe it'll replace the Wilhelm scream in upcoming movies. Such a great moment from this episode. Thanks so much, Lisa. And that's it for our chat about The Bad Batch 340 next week. The finale of The Bad Batch, the series finale, The Cavalry Has Arrived, is coming out on May 1st on Disney Plus. We'll have it in your podcast feeds on May 3rd, as usual, the Friday afterwards. Please keep sending in your feedback. We love to hear it. So keep emailing us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com. And of course, if you haven't so far, join us over in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries.
Yes. And don't forget, next week is the finale of the Cantina Quiz.
Mm-hmm.
So get all your questions and the answers together in the email. Pull that last question that we give out next week in and send it in to us, and you could be in the chance to win some good Bad Batch goodies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Bad Batch Funko Pops. Awesome. Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back with you again next time.
Yes, we'll be back next week with our fellow co-host as well, as our batch comes together to review the last Bad Batch ever. Shock horror. Thanks so much. Speak to you again soon.
Absolutely. And remember, keep watching, keep listening, and keep being bad. Bye.